Hello and welcome to the Rogers Brief for March 8th, 2024. I'm Adam Rogers. Thank you for watching and thank you for listening. Today I'm going to go through a series of sort of stories and I can fit them into four categories. I'm going to open up with a couple of sort of U.S. celebrity, actually three of them, U.S. celebrity stories that are legally themed. I think it might be interesting just to kick things off. Then I want to talk about some national Canadian stories. The Online Harms Act, which was introduced just last week, and some analysis of that piece of legislation from the federal government. Also, some news on the Emergencies Act and that legislation after the Emergencies Act was invoked with the Ottawa truckers protest. Some reaction there in two regards. One is, the government has been asked to look at the legislation itself and make some changes that emerge from the Rouleau Commission. And also two of the purported leaders of the trucker convoy are facing criminal charges, and there's a new development there as well. Then third thing I'm going to do is look at some Nova Scotia cases, some situations, including the trial decision of Cassandra Desmond, who was is the sister of late Corporal Lionel Desmond. She was charged with some very serious offenses on the anniversary date of the Desmond tragedy, January 3rd, 2022, 5 years after her family was killed. She was charged with a crime and had a decision come down last week. Then there's a class action being started, or hoping to be started, regarding jail lockdowns in Nova Scotia. They've been rampant throughout certainly the last few months and longer. And now a legal organization, law firm, has started a class action, or starting, or looking to start a class action. And then I'm going to end with a couple of developments in the law, or some, I guess, some cases or situations that look like they forecast new developments in the law. One is to do with psilocybin, magic mushrooms out in Vancouver, and the other is on routine traffic stops. Routine traffic stops with suspicionless police stops. And there's a case out of Quebec that's gone to the Court of Appeal level, which might have some national implications. It's dealing with specific Quebec legislation, but it's the kind of legislation that is also present across the country, so this may have some national implications. So let's get started. First one, all right, so I mentioned this case a couple of times. This is the Alec Baldwin movie set shooting, the Western Rust, which I can't see that, well, people are going to want to see this movie if it ever actually gets filmed and completed. But the you may recall that Alec Baldwin, lead actor in the movie, was holding a gun, and it was supposed to have, you know, as movie sets do, no live rounds in it. But this one did, and he ended up killing the cinematographer on the movie. Well, now the weapons supervisor, the armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, has been convicted by a jury of unsafe storage, unsafe handling of the firearms. She is now being assigned the blame for this. It was a jury trial, a 10-day trial. Jury only took 3 hours to deliberate, though. Say that she skipped or skimped the standard gun safety protocols. Now, why is this? This isn't Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin has been, he's gone through the first stage, the grand jury process, and will be probably facing a trial, although this trial should undercut that, because Ms. Gutierrez Reed, her defense tried to deflect the blame to others, including Alec Baldwin, who was a financier, the star of the movie, seemed to be, in her presentation at least, in control of much of the set and much of the rules. But the jury did not find that argument compelling at all. took a mere 3 hours to deliberate and came back with a guilty verdict against Miss Gutierrez-Reed. So apparently, you know, she brought live rounds onto the set, which wasn't needed, and didn't do any of the standard checks that you would do to make sure that these were fake bullets and not live rounds. So that's good news for Alec Baldwin, it would seem. Second one, anybody follows the Adiatrod up north, the Mushers, the dog sled race is, you know, big deal up in Alaska. Well, one of the star drivers, Dallas Seavey, had an issue. A moose attacked his convoy, his dog sled, and so he had to kill the moose. Well, you're supposed to, according to Alaska state law, you're supposed to properly gut and treat the carcass before you move on. And so he did gut the moose, he killed it, but he didn't do a good enough job and was penalized 2 hours on this multi-day long dog sled race. Usually the winners are, you know, the final competitors are usually within an hour or two of each other, so that could be, it could make the difference in the race. So anyway, law related. The other big celebrity news, in a way, out of the U.S. is from the U.S. Supreme Court, which just this week heard the case or decided the case of former President Trump. Several states, including Colorado and Maine, had attempted to keep Donald Trump off the presidential ballot. Supreme Court says they cannot do that. This was under the Insurrection Clause, Section 14 of the U.S. Constitution, saying that somebody who has participated in insurrection, having previously taken an oath of office, cannot run for president. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court says that state governments, state legislatures, cannot do that. They cannot bar somebody. It has to come from Congress. It has to be a national body that does that. So former President Trump is on the ballot everywhere and will be. The other, still waiting for the Supreme Court on the other, I think, more serious, I don't know, easier in a way to decide, but more impactful, which is the former president's claim that a president has immunity from criminal prosecution for anything that he does during his time as president, at least, or the extent to which there is presidential immunity over criminal acts, if there's any connection to official duties. So this has to do with the January 6 riots on Capitol Hill and whether the president's role in that amounts to a crime. Well, that trial hasn't taken place yet. Reports out of the U.S. say that the result of that trial could affect many votes. Hard to say if it really will, but the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court is now prepared to hear arguments on this might, on this, the claim that a president has immunity might delay the actual trial itself. Because if you have to decide this preliminary matter, it goes to the Supreme Court, it takes a few months to do. Well, very quickly running up against the November election, timing-wise. So people say this is a tactic on the Trump campaign's part. Hard to argue with that. I know that Jack Smith, the special prosecutor that's looking after that, is alive to the timing issue and hoping that the Supreme Court hears this very quickly and deals with it and gets it over with so that the trial itself can proceed. So that'll be big news in the States, so we'll watch for that. All right, Canadian news. The big Canadian legal news over the last little bit is the introduction of the Online Harms Act. Now, this is the federal government's third attempt, really, to try to cover this ground. So it's Bill C-63, introduced February 26th, and applies to social media companies, and it identifies seven different harms, much of which is you know, not going to be controversial territory, talking about child exploitation or non-consensual disclosure of intimate images. Anything that induces a child to harm themselves or bullies a child. These kinds of things are supposed to be taken down, you know, upon reports, as long as there's a reasonable, the standard is pretty low. You have to have, it must be reasonable to suspect that these things are going to harm a child, induce the child to harm themselves, bully a child, such. So then it has to be taken down by the social media company within 24 hours. There's then a mechanism for the creator, the poster of the content to explain themselves, explain why it isn't, in violation of the legislation. And then if they make a compelling case, then it can go back up. If not, then, there's further appeal mechanisms. Well, that's not really the problem here. Everybody kind of agrees, I think, that those things should be monitored and dealt with in an expeditious fashion by the social media companies. It gets into some trickier territory as it goes on, though, and there are other categories for speech that foments hatred, speech that incites violent extremism or terrorism. All right, so there's some of these things are already illegal, and so the issue then becomes, should it be dealt with in the court system or by this proposed new bureaucracy, the Online Safety Commission? Okay, well, what is the Online Safety Commission? It would be a bureaucracy created by this current Liberal government, and it would have a 3 to 5 member panel, but they would be empowered to employ other people. It'd be like any, like the Human Rights Commission or any other commission. All right, you have the oversight body, but then in the same as the prosecution service, you have the head of the prosecution service, but then you have prosecutors all over the place that have the same authority that basically the minister has. In this case, you could have an online safety commission made up of a body of 5 individuals appointed by the government, and then overseeing a bureaucracy of dozens, hundreds, thousands. It doesn't, you know, there's no real limit in the legislation as to what that could entail. So what we could be seeing is an exponential growth in the policing of online speech. It's that simple, right? So the question is, all right, who is guiding this speech? Who is guiding this oversight? And it's the current Liberal government, which has taken the concept of, you know, diversity and wokeness beyond a place where most Canadians, I think, would be comfortable. And, you know, instead of seeing people as, complex individuals with a common humanity, it is seeing people as their features first. Their gender, their ethnicity, their views on things. That comes first, and then the potential for common humanity is diminished. All right, so I think most people, one of the reasons why the Liberals are so far down in the polls is that most Canadians don't have the same interpretation or views of what equality is and thus what might constitute hate speech. So this is the problem with instituting this legislation now from a government which is at 20% in the polls and is on its way out to, I guess, you know, create this kind of bureaucracy at this point with the guidance from this government, I think is going to be a big problem. And so it should be amended. So there's issues are, they're going to amend the criminal code to include offenses motivated by hate. All right, well, right now, if you're charged with a crime, the focus of the hearing is going to be whatever the conduct of the person is, not whatever motivated them. Now, with this change, it'll be a discussion in many, many cases of whether the offense was motivated by hate, and therefore you're going to have to get into the individual's comments, ideology, online presence, online personality, and see whether that is indeed what motivated them. Well, that means that's going to become the focus of the hearing rather than the conduct. And that's just not good. It's going to bring all of these ideological battles into the daily experiences of many more people. Just not the right way to approach criminal law. Right now, if it's obvious that something was motivated by hate or prejudice, that sort of thing, it's an aggravating circumstance in sentencing, and that's the appropriate place to keep it, not at the front end where it'll be argued and become more of the focus. The other one is the Human Rights Act. It's going to be amended to include communication of hate speech. And again, this is, every time Jordan Peterson tweets something, every time, somebody controversial says something, then that's opening up, a $20,000 fine to that person. And anybody, you don't even have to be a victim directly, can make a complaint to the Human Rights Commission. This could potentially lead to an explosion of complaints, and this is not good. So, Online Harms Act, yes, all right, keep the mechanisms with social media to protect children, to protect against non-consensual disclosure of intimate images. These hate speech provisions, changes to the Criminal Code, Human Rights Act, those need to be hived off and removed. Those just not appropriate for these times. Another an issue I notice: David Frazier, privacy lawyer, and McGinnis Cooper in Halifax, runs a very good blog and does a good YouTube job as well, pointed out these deep fake technology issues are going to become a bit of a, they're going to have to need some legal interpretation, because the issue is a fake person. Well, deep fakes that depict a real person, that's not, that's less of an issue, because that person should be able to not consent to its disclosure. But what if it's the creation of content that doesn't use any person, that's just artificial intelligence, a complete creation of artificial intelligence, which is happening? Well, then there's nobody to consent. But the problem is with the legislation, as David points out, is that it's not the creation of the video that's criminalized or sanctioned. It's the communication, the sending of the video. And so if there's nobody to consent, then there's no way that you can say that the person has consented. There is no person. So it seems to be anyway, maybe not much of an issue, but there seems to be a bit of a potential issue there when it comes to AI-generated imagery. Okay, so we'll watch for some of those debates. I'm sure that's going to be the focus of the Parliament for much of this session. All right, let's go on to next national story, which is the Emergencies Act. And there's two sides of this. One is, okay, so the Emergencies Act Commission, the Rouleau Commission, recommended some changes to the legislation itself. There was confusion. You might remember the definition of what constitutes a threat to the security of Canada came from the CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service legislation. And so a threat to the security of Canada, the definition came from our spy agency's legislation. If somebody started an insurrection against Canada or going to war against Canada, that's a threat to the security. But the same language was used in the Emergencies Act in a different context. And so one of the things Justice Rouleau said is that that definition should be clarified to make sure that we know what we're talking about here, because it wasn't clear to him. You know, there was a different interpretation from the Rouleau Commission than there was from Justice Richard Moseley in the federal court legislation or decision on the same topic. So there's definitely some lack of clarity. Second thing that Justice Rouleau said the government should look at is changing the legislation to ensure that all cabinet material that was relied upon, including things that were done in camera, all advice that was given, that should be turned over to the commissioner. If the Emergencies Act is going to be invoked, the commissioner of inquiry looking at this afterwards, and that's part of the legislation, is that if you invoke the act, there's going to be an inquiry, that commissioner should be able to see what advice the government was given, not just the public portions of that advice. So that's the situation now. So the government's saying, well, we need more time to consult. They want to consult widely with all, you know, provincial time, and they're going to take their time doing this. Well, that's just going to run out the clock. There's going to be an election before all that happens, and rather than doing it now in a timely fashion, they're just putting it off for no reason. I mean, the changes, the two areas that I mentioned, those two areas can be changed without wide consultation. You just do a good job of drafting the legislation. So not sure why the government is delaying that. But they certainly are. And Dominic LeBlanc was at the forefront of that. The second part of the Emergencies Act situation is this ongoing trial with Tamara Litch and Chris Barber, purported leaders of the trucker convoy. And that trial was started last year and hasn't been in court. I don't know if it, maybe just for this argument on a narrow issue this year at all. And in the article I read, it didn't give any more dates for when the trial's to continue. But the issue that was decided this week was whether the Crown could continue arguing this conspiracy charge. Defense tried to present an argument that that conspiracy charge was out, was finished. Well, the justice says, no, that can continue. So to have a conspiracy charge, you have to prove, the Crown needs to prove the existence of a conspiracy, of a joint effort, that the person in question was a member of the conspiracy. And then once you get to that point, a third part of the test is that you're allowed to consider hearsay. So the acts and the declarations of purported co-conspirators. So they've gone through that and decided that there's at least enough evidence to consider that those two individuals were part of a criminal conspiracy in this case. All right, so those are the big national stories. I'm going to end with some, I'm going to do a couple of Nova Scotia cases. One that was, close to me in a sense, although I wasn't the lawyer on this case, knew Cassandra Desmond quite well and was aware of her charges. This arose, and this wasn't in the decision from Justice Hoskins. Really well-written decision, thorough, and also anybody that's interested in the law of self-defense could read this decision too. Justice Hoskins went through some recent Supreme Court of Canada jurisprudence on self-defense and how that applies here. But his decision is quite thorough. Not guilty verdict for Cassandra Desmond, accused of stabbing somebody, attempted murder, aggravated assault with a knife at Dooley's on January 3rd, 2022, which was the fifth anniversary of the family tragedy. She was out with her cousin at Dooley's, just enjoying a quiet evening, and these two drunk, on drugs of some sort, guys showed up being aggressive with a guy that was with Miss Desmond and her cousin, and you know, everybody was trying to keep the peace on the Desmond side. These other two, Elijah Watts and I can't remember the other guy's name, were being very aggressive and just wouldn't stop. And so Cassandra Desmond had to help defend her friend, and bar staff wasn't doing anything. I mean, they weren't in a position to do anything. There was no security present. And so Justice Hoskins said that all of Miss Desmond's actions were defensive in nature. So what's the issue here? They never should have gone to trial. There was video of the entire incident from multiple angles at Dooley's. And Justice Hoskins basically said, you know, I watched the video and I could see exactly what happened. And everything she did was defensive in nature, completely appropriate on her part. And she's not guilty. So, raises the question, why was she ever charged? You know, anybody that watches the videos themselves can see who was the aggressor and what took place. And so, you know, a terrible thing to have to go through for Miss Desmond, and glad that it worked out the way it did. A complete exoneration of her actions. You know, at all points she did. She was trying to keep the peace. She tried to keep people apart, and you know, only took action when it was it was called for, and there were no other options. And these two large, aggressive men couldn't be stopped in any other way. So, good for her, and nice to see that decision. Another Nova Scotia situation that's been in the news a lot is the jail situation in Nova Scotia. And I hear this a lot from clients that are in, you know, whether it's Sydney or Burnside or Northeast Nova up in near Glasgow. Lockdowns, completely, you know, understaffed. Lockdowns are happening all the time. Nobody's getting any time out, any fresh air, any recreation time, any social time. And so now there's a class action, proposed class action led by Mike Dull, who is from Valent Legal, one of the top class action litigators in Nova Scotia in the region, and PATH Legal, those are PATH, it's an acronym, led by Emma Halpern, formerly of Elizabeth Fry, and there's a connection between PATH and the Elizabeth Fry Society. Dealing with people in jail, people in vulnerable situations. So I think this is going to get certified. It is not yet, but there's a lot of commonalities to, you know, a class action. You need to have common situations and that it's, you know, and there's a case there. So yes, there is a case. Their rights have been violated, you know, on a daily basis. That it's more convenient to have these heard jointly. Well, we've already seen in the Supreme Court, some certiorari judgments that have come down, identical judgments with multiple different plaintiffs. So I think that this will meet the test for a class action. Representative plaintiff's name is James Williams, who was at Burnside and getting locked down. He said 75% of the time, just because of understaffing. So we'll watch that class action. I think that'll go ahead. All right, two quick things to just end off with. These are, signs of things to come. All right, one is in Vancouver. City Council there, a small subcommittee, mind you, but has allowed a medical mushroom dispensary to get a business license. This is a downtown business on West Broadway in Vancouver. The mayor is not happy. So, you know, psilocybin, the agent in these mushrooms that creates the psychedelic effect, is still restricted under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act. But, you know, there's lots of evidence of medical use and benefits for this. So this seems to be taking a similar path to the cannabis legalization, you know, which took place over the 2014-15, of course, is a longer history of it, but the same with psilocybin. Looks like it's going down the same path too. Vancouver always on the cutting edge of this, for better or worse. Benefits of microdosing and mental health benefits of psilocybin are being explored. Wouldn't be surprised if this takes the same path as the legalization of cannabis. So watch for that. Second one is in Quebec. It was a 21-day trial in Quebec, and the Canadian Civil Liberties Association is participating in this, about suspicionless police roadside stops. So this is under the Quebec Highway Safety Code, but this applies across the country because police are able to just stop vehicles whenever they wish. And, you know, there's less and less requirement in the legislation for them to have any real suspicion of what's going on. They can just do a routine or a random stops. Well, the argument in Quebec has been that these are unconstitutional because they are based completely on appearances and conscious prejudice. This is what the trial decision declared, not road safety objectives. So, 21-day trial with various victims, experts, police officers went into that decision. Now it's at the Court of Appeal level in Quebec. Wouldn't be surprised to see this make it to the Supreme Court of Canada, and you know, the attack could be a broader attack on the rights of police to just stop drivers for no reason. So we'll watch for that. Lots of interesting stuff this week. I hope everybody enjoys their March break. March break is starting in Nova Scotia today for some. Some people are off school today with the weather or with in services, and I hope everybody enjoys themselves over the week to come. I'll be on Sunday night with Jordan Bonaparte and Paul Palango on the Sunday Night Show, starting at 9:15 p.m. on live on YouTube. Look up the Sunday Night Show for that. And otherwise, we'll be back here next week at the end of March break with any new developments. So until then, thank you everybody for watching. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.